To Charles Stanton, there was nothing like a good, close shave. He stood that morning in front of the big mirror strapped to the side of James Reed's wagon. In every direction, the prairie unfurled like a blanket, occasionally rippled by wind. Mile after uninterrupted mile of buffalo grass, disrupted only by the red spire of Chimney Rock, standing like a sentry in the distance. If he squinted, the wagon train looked like children's toys scattered in the vast, unending brush, flimsy, meaningless, inconsequential. He turned to the mirror and steadied the blade under his jaw, remembering one of his grandfather's favorite expressions, "A wicked man hides behind a beard, like Lucifer." Stanton knew plenty of men who were happy enough with a well-honed knife, even some who used a hatchet. But for him, nothing would do but a straight razor. He didn't shrink from the feel of cold metal against his throat. In fact, he kind of liked it. "I didn't think you were a vain man, Charles Stanton," a voice came from behind him. "But if I didn't know any better, I might wonder if you weren't admiring yourself." Edwin Bryant came toward him with a tin cup of coffee in his hand. The smile faded quickly. "You're bleeding." Stanton looked down at the razor. It was streaked with red. In the mirror, he saw a line of crimson at his throat, a gaping 3-inch slash where the tip of his blade had been. The razor was so sharp that he hadn't felt a thing. Stanton jerked the towel from his shoulder and pressed it to the wound. "My hand must have slipped," he said. "Sit down," Bryant said. "Let me take a look at it. I have a little medical training, you know." Stanton sidestepped Bryant's outstretched hand. "I'm fine, it's nothing. A mishap." That was this damnable journey in a nutshell, one unexpected mishap after another. Bryant shrugged. "If you say so, wolves can smell blood from 2 miles away." "What can I do for you?" Stanton asked. He knew that Bryant hadn't come down the wagon train just to talk, not when they were supposed to be yoking up. Around them, the regular morning chaos whirled. Teamsters herded the oxen, the ground rumbling beneath the animals' weight. Men dismantled their tents and loaded them into their wagons or smothered out fires beneath sand. The air was filled with the sound of children shouting as they carried buckets of water for the day's drinking and washing. Stanton and Bryant hadn't known each other long, but had quickly developed a friendship. The party Stanton had been traveling with prior, a small wagon train out of Illinois consisting mostly of the Donner and Reed families, had recently joined up with a much larger group led by a retired military man, William Russell, outside Independence, Missouri. Edwin Bryant had been one of the first members from the Russell party to introduce himself and seemed to gravitate to Stanton, perhaps because they were both single men in a wagon train full of families. In appearance, Edwin Bryant was Stanton's opposite. Stanton was tall, strong without trying to be. He had been complimented on his good looks his entire life. It had all come from his mother, as far as he could tell. He had her thick, wavy, dark brown hair and soulful eyes. "Thy looks are a gift from the devil, boy, so you might tempt others to sin," another of his grandfather's pronouncements. Once, he'd smashed Stanton's face with a belt buckle, maybe hoping to chase out the devil he saw there. It hadn't worked. Stanton had kept all his teeth, and his nose had healed. The scar on his forehead had faded. The devil, as far as he knew, had stayed. Bryant was probably a decade older. Years as a newspaper man had left him softer than most of the men on the journey, who were farmers or carpenters or blacksmiths, men who made a living through hard physical labor. He had weak eyes and needed a pair of spectacles almost constantly. He had a perpetually disheveled air, as though his thoughts were always elsewhere. There was no denying that he was sharp, though, probably the smartest man in the party. He'd admitted to having spent a few years as a doctor's apprentice when he was very young, though he didn't want to be pressed into service as the camp physician. "Take a look at this." Bryant kicked a tuft of vegetation at their feet, sending up a puff of dust. Have you noticed? The grass is dry for this time of year. They had been traveling on a flat plain for days now, the horizon a long stretch of tall prairie grass and scrub, flanking the trail on either side in the distance, sand hills of gold and coral rose and fell, some craggy as fingers, pointing directly to heaven. Stanton crouched low and pulled a few strands of grass. The blades were short, no more than 9 or 10 inches long, and were already faded to a dull brownish green. "Looks like there was a drought not too long ago," Stanton said. He stood, smacking the dirt off his palms, looking toward the far-off hazy purple scrim. The land seemed to stretch on forever. "And we're just entering the plain," Bryant pointed out. His meaning was clear. There might not be enough grass for their oxen and livestock to eat. Grass, water, wood, the three things a wagon train needed. "Conditions are worse than we thought they'd be, and we've got a long way to go. See that mountain range off in the distance? That's just the beginning, Charles. There are more mountains behind those, and desert, and prairie, and rivers wider and deeper than any we've crossed so far, all between us and the Pacific Ocean." Stanton had heard this litany before. Bryant had said little else ever since they had come across the trapper's shack at Ash Hollow 2 days ago. The empty shack had been turned into a frontier outpost of sorts for the pioneers crossing the plains, who had taken to leaving letters behind for the next eastbound traveler to carry to a real post office for delivery onward. Many of these letters were simply folded pieces of paper left under a rock in the hope that they would eventually reach the intended recipient back home. Stanton had been strangely comforted by the sight of all those letters. They had seemed a testament to the traveler's love of freedom and desire for greater opportunity, no matter the risk. But Bryant had gotten agitated. "Look at all these letters. Must be dozens of them, maybe 100. The settlers who wrote them are ahead of us on the trail. We're among the last to head out this season, and you know what that means, don't you?" he'd asked Stanton. "We might be too late. The mountain passes will be closed off by snow come winter, and winter comes early in higher elevations." "Patience, Edwin," Stanton said now. "We've barely put Independence behind us." "Yet here it is the middle of June. We're moving too slowly." Slinging the towel back over his shoulder, Stanton looked around him. The sun had been up for hours, and yet they hadn't broken camp. All around him, families were still finishing their breakfasts over the remains of their campfires. Mothers stood dandling babies in their arms as they swapped gossip. A boy was out playing with a dog instead of herding the family's oxen in from the field. "Can you blame them on such a fine morning?" he asked lightly. After weeks on the trail, no one was anxious to face another day. Half the men were only in a hurry when it came time to break out the jug of mash. Bryant only frowned. Stanton rubbed the back of his neck. "Anyway, Russell is the man to talk to." Bryant grimaced as he stooped to retrieve his coffee cup. "I've talked to Russell about it, and he agrees, and yet does nothing about it. The man can't say no to anyone. Earlier in the week, you remember, he let those men go off on a buffalo hunt, and the train sat idle for 2 days to smoke and dry the meat." "We might be happy for that meat farther down the trail." "I guarantee you that we'll see more buffalo, but we'll never get those days back." Stanton saw the sense in what Bryant said and didn't want to argue. "Look, I'll go with you tonight and we'll speak to Russell together. We'll make him see that we're serious."